I know you were at the watch party once again this week for Top Chef, and what's your takeaway?
I thought that was a really good episode of Top Chef. The first episode was a little weird. There wasn't a quick fire. It was kind of, you know, they had a lot of new people to introduce and the new host to introduce. This felt like a proper episode of Top Chef, and I really liked it. And I thought they did a good job of doing a beer episode without it being like a totally stereotypical Wisconsin beer episode. I thought doing hops for the quick fire challenge was kind of a clever way to do beer without doing beer. And obviously you're going to do Miller when you're doing a beer challenge here in Milwaukee, but I like that they took place in the Miller Caves. And we kind of, if you're someone like me who hasn't been able to see that part of Milwaukee yet, it was kind of a cool way to, you know, spotlight a part of Milwaukee that many of us haven't seen. Weirdly, my biggest issue with the production of the show happened at Judge's Table. I don't know why they brought both teams out to announce the winner and the loser and then had the losing team or the winning team just kind of awkwardly standing off to the side. Normally that's what the stew room is for, and that's where you also get a lot of the drama and a lot of, like, the villainy behavior is you have these, like, chefs stuck in this tiny room and, like, thinking about their lives, thinking about their choices, and that's when people start getting a little snippy and start, like, you know, building some animosity towards each other, and instead they kind of had that weird setup. I am interested, this was a team challenge, and normally this is when, you know, the villain pops out. This is when, you know, somebody tries to take control of the team or doesn't agree with something or totally steamroll somebody's plans or throw somebody under the bus at the judges' table. And instead, everyone was super nice and super into, like, being on a team. So I'm kind of interested to see if at any point we will get that classic reality show villainy this season.
Sounds like you're looking forward to that.
You know, you want some characters. You know, I honestly, the biggest character, the biggest personality so far this season beyond Hat Guy, and we do not speak of Hat Guy anymore, was Dan. And Dan speaking about his Kennedy's disease and how that kind of makes it difficult for him to kind of have the full range of motion and muscle use that the rest of his chefs do have. And I'll be interested to see how that plays out for the rest of the season as well.
You know, that's a good question, because I was thinking the same thing, is how will viewers react to him with that? Is that going to make him more sympathetic to the audience?
I think so. What will be interesting is how the other chefs respond to this, because, I mean, I remember season 6, the Las Vegas season of Top Chef, when there was Robin, who was a cancer survivor, who talked about surviving cancer to the judges, and one of her fellow chefs, Eli, started, like, being really critical of that, started being like, oh, like, you're just using that to kind of get ahead and use sympathy, and it was really kind of cold and heartless on that chef. But I'm interested to see if maybe, you know, depending on how things go, you know, if people start holding that against Dan. And Dan talked about how it was like, I don't want to bring this up really if I can. Like, I don't want to make this a thing because I don't want people to look at me differently. Or maybe he too watched season 6 of Top Chef and was like, I don't want people to be like, oh, you're just using that to be a sympathetic and stuff like that.
Interesting perception on that. And again, where are you doing these watch parties for Top Chef?
Every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, we are at Zocalo in Walker's Point. There's drink deals. We've got the show on with volume and subtitles. It's a great time. Come out and join us.
All right. So the other thing, big, it's really the only opening this Easter weekend, and this is Godzilla versus Kong. But now, correct me if I'm wrong, they are kind of friends in this, and they work together?
Yeah, so the last movie was Godzilla versus Kong, and now they're buddies. Now it's Godzilla and Kong.
It's a buddy movie.
It's a buddy movie. It's like Lethal Weapon, but with a giant lizard and a giant monkey. And I'll be honest with you, it's going to be kind of hard for this movie because we had such a tremendous Godzilla movie come out last winter with Godzilla Minus One, the Oscar-winning Godzilla Minus One, that it's going to kind of be hard for this one to be like, oh, you know, we're just making a dumb, fun Godzilla movie. And it's like, no, but we had the good, fun Godzilla movie come out just recently. So I'll be interested to see if the audiences are really interested in this one or if they're going to be like, no, give me more of that Japanese version of this story.
I saw one little bit where apparently Kong has some sort of an arm weapon that they put on him. was really
I don't know. Apparently he's
like
got
an
like an Iron Man thing or something. Yeah. I don't know, because apparently being a giant ape wasn't enough. Now he apparently has a power glove. I don't know. And Godzilla is pink, I guess. And they're weirdly hiding from the audiences who they're fighting, because half the fun of these kind of monster movies is, you know, oh, who's the big bad that they got to go up against? And in this movie, they're kind of being coy about, like, I don't know, might be other monkeys, might be another Godzilla. And I'm just like, no, tell me. Tell me on that, you know? I don't know. I'm not sure about this.
All right. Finally, Matt, of course, the Brewers started playing this past week, but they're finally coming home for their home opener on Tuesday. And to celebrate that, I know you have some baseball-themed movies you wanted to share with us.
Yeah, I have a list of the five best baseball movies on Milwaukee.com. And if you want to watch some baseball movies, Bull Durham, in my opinion, the greatest baseball movie ever made, that is available on Amazon Prime, so you can watch that there. And Major League, which we obviously have a tight bond to here since they filmed a decent part of it here in Milwaukee, that's available on Max. So two of the best baseball movies ever made, you should definitely check those out. I believe Moneyball is on Netflix, which I think Moneyball is a pretty underrated baseball movie from recent years. I really like that movie. There's a lot of really good baseball movies. We have been blessed with a lot of good baseball movies. The Sandlot is out there. Check them out.
Don't forget Field of Dreams and The Natural.
Field of Dreams and The Natural. Of course, again, there are so many good baseball movies. I could do another top five baseball movies list in addition to the five I've already done. It's really good. As opposed to, like, football, which there's not a ton of great football movies if you really think about it. I'm trying to think of, like, the best one. I don't know. Rudy? Ugh.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're into baseball season. Matt, as always, it is great to have you here. We will follow you and check out all of your reviews at onmilwaukee.com. And also, we'll check into that Top Chef viewing party this week.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks for having me.